VanWee Financial is a registered investment advisor. Information presented is for educational purposes only and does not intend to make an offer or solicitation for the sale or purchase of any specific securities, investments, or investment strategies. Investments involve risk and, unless otherwise stated, are not guaranteed. Be sure to first consult with a qualified financial advisor and or tax professional before implementing any strategy discussed herein. It's Saturday morning, it's 10 o'clock, and this is the VanWee Financial Hour. I'm Steve VanWee.
I'm Marshall Gallup.
That's right. We have a different voice today. Adam was off today. We'll be back next week, and Marshall, our local reverse mortgage specialist, has very kindly agreed to do the show. There have been some changes on and off over the years in reverse mortgages. Over the life of reverse mortgages, there's probably been more change than almost anything I can think of in financial planning. And nowadays, they're getting better again. They started poor, got better, kind of took a little step back, and now they're getting a little bit better. We got some smarter people at the helm now. So I purposely did not ask Marshall to update me on the business as it stands prior to today, because I want to, like you, learn a little bit with an open mind about what's actually going on in the business. And then, of course, we can talk about the usefulness of the thing for the right people. And I've got a whole bunch of things to say about it, because you hear a lot that is just not true. And that does not make for common sense financial planning when you know things that just aren't true. Very common in today's society. We also have many other topics. We'll have a trivia question. We're going to talk a little bit about this crazy week in the market. And I don't know where it's going to go. Anyway, if you want to sit here and listen to everything Marshall and I care to talk about, that's fine. We hope you stick around. Thanks to everybody who does. But if you want to talk about something you'd like to talk about, all you got to do is pick up the phone and dial 904-222-8255. Or 222-TALK, and we will immediately put you to the head of the line, and we'll talk about whatever it is that's on your mind. And there is no shortage of topics today, and that's for sure. So, this week, I spent quite a lot of time this week trying to figure out, you know me, I like to do a one-word or one-phrase description of the whole week and just sum it all up. So I made a list of them, and I started going down the list, and the first six are, you know, at least contained words I can't say on the radio. So I went down to number seven, and seven was suitable for young children, so I called it The Return of Chicken Little. And it has a close competitor, number eight, that was I'm Not Afraid to Call the Baby Ugly. That was the market this week. After our big fall a week ago, I thought there's a good chance we might have bottomed out. Didn't know for sure, but went into it, you know, ho-hum on Monday a little bit. And then all of a sudden, we started a rip, snort, and tear on Tuesday and wound up with about 550 points on the Dow. I was patting myself on the back a bit prematurely, probably, because the next 3 days were full of ups and downs, and lots of those downs were downs. And what happened was we wound up a week where virtually nothing happened. The Dow was up a little bit. NASDAQ was down a little bit. S&P was up just slightly. It was hardly worth talking about except for one thing. It didn't emulate the week before, and that is a good thing. That if you're an optimist, you could look at that and say, well, okay, maybe we needed a little bottom for a while. You got to get what I call a confirming day. When you get a day like Tuesday, it's easy to get euphoric. But without a confirming day or two, it doesn't mean anything. It's just noise in the system. So we didn't get it, so I can't really tell you yet that I'm wildly optimistic. But it seems like we're bouncing along the bottom until whatever happens. Now, it's hardly a surprise when you listen to the news, and it is just so pathetic out there, what they're trying to do with numbers and stories. It's all Trump's fault. You might think we're getting close to an election or something. Whoa, wait, we are, aren't we? So you know, they're going to do everything they can in the liberal media to talk down the economy, and they're going to do everything they can to point fingers at Trump, and nothing, he's not doing anything right, and the Chinese thing is horrible. Just disregard all that. The Chinese market this year is down about 26%, and the U.S. market is just kind of hanging along with a slight profit. Now, that's a wild divergence. So all this talk about the trade and the tariffs and all that, oh, it's going to kill everybody. Well, as Trump pointed out, and as we have verified, it hurts them a lot more than it hurts us. And you can see that now when they reported the slowest growth since 2009 at a mere 6.5%. Now, you know what happens when we get pushing 6.5%. The Fed goes nuts and makes darn sure they can just slam the door on it so it doesn't happen again, because you can't have that. Can't have this country be that successful. Well, now Trump's angry with the Fed. The Fed's doing all the right things for all the wrong reasons. Should I be happy with them, or should I be unhappy with them? I have extreme mixed emotions on it. We've got to eventually normalize interest rates. What do you think the term normalize is based on? Oh, wait, normal? Isn't that the root word? Let's get normal. We spent 10 years accomplishing virtually nothing as an economy. Now we're accomplishing something, and it is booming. All right, if it's a booming economy, let's go back to normal. It's just me. You can disagree if you want to. You'll lose if you try, because I won't listen to you.
Now, I'll give you
my show.
I'll give you the examples of what is normal. When is it normal?
It's normal when interest rates are in the 4, 5, 6
range. If you recall, when the savings and loan debacle happened, there was this entity called the Resolution Trust Corporation.
RTC.
And those who had done things wrong went out of business and went to jail.
Mm-hmm. That's true.
In our recent downturn, which presidents of which banks or financial institutions went to jail?
But Marshall, how could that be? We have Sarbanes-Oxley. We have Dodd-Frank. Isn't that all designed to catch all these bad guys and put them in jail? Or maybe not. You know, you've heard me say many times, I think what we need to do is take all these laws that are named for people who were in Congress, and when they leave Congress, the law should sunset itself. That's my opinion. But you're right. You're absolutely right. Nothing happened.
So it depends upon your definition of normal.
It really does. Well, you know, normal is whatever today isn't, I guess. But normal is not zero interest rate.
Normal,
that's the big deal.
Normal in Northeast Florida is the chance to live in a paradise.
That's true. Boy, is it normal lately, huh? It might be a little warm today, but it's dropping for the rest of the week. We were just looking at it. So if you don't live here, you should. If you can hear my voice. And if you do live here, don't tell anybody. How's that? Just tell them to close the border. What can you say? Anyway, what's coming up? Well, the earnings season is looking outstanding. And they're going to be stories about how, well, the earnings are looking terrible and all that. It's just absolute hogwash. It is not true. Everything's coming in great. I thoroughly expect a turnaround in this market and a very, very good end of the year into the first few months of next year, because this is the strongest time of the year, November to April. You should be in. If you're not, it's time to start getting in. You don't have to jump head first, but you should start getting in. There's nothing, in my humble opinion, that we should fear terribly. All of the forward-looking signs are very positive for the economy. Frankly, what happens in the next election is almost irrelevant. If we keep the Senate, everything will be fine. Whatever else happens, the market is not going to care about one little bit. So don't let it disturb you if it doesn't go your way. But do vote. All right, don't go anywhere. We'll be right back after a short break. This is the Van Wee Financial Hour. Welcome back to the Van Wee Financial Hour. I'm Steve Van Wee.
I'm Marshall Gallup.
And we are going to delve in the probably the after the bottom of the hour to reverse mortgage changes lately. But got a couple of things I want to handle first. And this was kind of triggered a little bit because Marshall sent me an email, and I looked at it this morning, and it was about questions that aren't about mortgages. It's all financial things, but they were wonderful, and it was relative to some research that some people have been doing, and it supports my theory about how things are really good. One of them has to do with how much Trump is saving businesses through regulatory reform with the National Register. Is that what it's called?
The Federal Register.
Federal Register. Thank you. I knew it didn't sound right. Actually shrinking for the first time in many presidents. So my question is, to the nearest $1 billion, how much has Trump saved our businesses through regulatory reform? You might be surprised. Most presidents cost you money. This one is saving you money. All right, question. Oh, yes, question one. This is the right one. Job openings minus unemployed workers. Is this where the statistical tolerance still doesn't hide? Could we use a bunch more workers? What do you think about that?
Obviously, there are more jobs being created, and yep. That's good.
That is good.
You ever remember a movie called Dave?
Oh, yeah, I love that movie.
It was a great movie because the guy had been in the employment business, and his comment was, he says, it's the greatest view you can see is the smile on the face of a person finally getting a job.
Yeah.
So how many things do we benefit as a people because folks are working, they have a job? And when you have a lot of jobs and there's more supply of jobs than there is demand, mm-hmm. Now some people get a chance to improve their job. That helps for everybody.
A big deal, and it is evidenced right now by the quit rate, which is all of a sudden going through the roof. Because you don't quit a job unless you've satisfied that one basic criteria. I got not only a different one, but probably a much better one. And we've been telling people now for about a year, people, if you're not getting anywhere in your job, now is the time to quit. Well, look what happened. All of a sudden, the number of jobs open has now topped 7 million, where we have 6 million people who are available to work. Well, there's still a lot of people on the sidelines. The people who dropped out of the workforce are coming back in, but they're not coming back in at a big enough rate. It's kind of a balancing act, I guess I'd say, between those people and bringing in more people. What we do not need is people whose skills we do not know about. These jobs that are open right now are not shoveling snow in Wisconsin and mowing lawns in Florida, although there are some of each of those, I'm sure, that are open. But we're talking about people in the tech industry. We're talking about manufacturing jobs and so on. We need skilled people in this country, and therefore we not only need immigration, but we need very careful, very well-planned and thought-out immigration. But, yeah, we're not producing them.
And yet there still is always the need for leadership.
Always. But
think of how many different times you have worked for someone who inspired you to perform better.
What are the four factors of production? Land, labor, capital, and entrepreneurism. We need innovative people. Labor without someone to direct it is useless. That's the old dig the hole and then fill it up with the next hole.
Someone who is managing a business, who is doing it by berating or harassing their employees, doesn't understand motivation, teamwork, those kinds of things. And that's who's going to lose their employees. That's who's going to have problems with their employees.
They'll survive only during the worst of times. They will not survive during the best of times. In fact, you see a lot of employers now that are reducing the standards for entry into their companies. A lot of them are now, your college education doesn't matter. And some are even going so far as to say some occasional drug use is going to be tolerated on your application. Hopefully it'll stop after that. But it's all happening. Wages are starting to rise. The national media is telling us that one of the biggest problems in the Trump economy is that wages aren't rising. What they do not factor in is the 10, 12, 13,000 people a day who retire because they're turning 65, 67, right? They're getting replaced with much younger people who will work for less money. And that is not being factored into the equation. Good morning, George.
Yeah, good morning. I've been pushing for years now the school board and other people, including Bill Bennett, who was Secretary of Education, that we have some situations we need to avoid, like 47% of the freshmen in state-supported schools fail the first year.
Yep.
They should not be there, and they're not mature enough, or they should be in a trade school. And therefore, frankly, every student should go through a trade school situation, say 8th, 9th, 10th grade, starting with putting kids on maybe 6 weeks in each type of job they might want in 8th grade, kind of work-study. I kind of did that because my father was a Multicraft supervisor, Atomic Energy Commission. We rebuilt houses on the weekend, did all kind of things.
Mm-hmm.
And I came out with, I'm not bragging because my grades weren't that great, but I came out with the highest starting salary at Auburn University because of that, because I already had the work experience. So whether you're going to continue in trades or go on to college, we should have trade school for a commercial school for every single child. And one other thing it does is let the kids see what the real world's like early on before they get thoroughly brainwashed.
Yeah, it's been going on a long time. My wife was a teacher in the 70s, and some of the kids that were coming into the public schools at that point had very little concept of things like what time of day it is, that there's a start time and an end time to a class, and those sort of fundamental skills if you're an employer. And they got a lot worse after that. And you're right. Look at all the things we used to take.
Well, the Philippines, graduate nurses before 12th grade, or as they're finishing up. Germany has kept trade schools since the Middle Ages. And Singapore has some of the best schools in the world, but it's because the parents are highly involved in what the kids do. And they do have the trade schools type situation,
yeah.
Also.
Germany's been a leader in that since I can remember.
George, I would suggest you just hit a very important point. There is a responsibility of parents to provide some direction, some expectations, but also some motivation. I knew from very early that I was expected to go to college. But my father got me a job after my senior year of high school for the summer, working in a strip mine. Now, that was the highest paying job I could have gotten in the Keystone Heights area. It also was probably the hardest job I had. And I met a number of laborers, and I realized very quickly, I'm going to enjoy having this amount of additional money now, but I sure don't want to do this for the rest of my life. I better try to get some grades.
Going to college.
Absolutely. It puts responsibility and thinking about the future in the kid's head.
Yep.
Instead of memorizing a lot of silliness that they're not going to ever use. And by the time 8th, 9th, 10th grade comes around, they ought to have two trades, and they ought to have a license for it. And then you keep the money for 11th and 12th, either pre-college or to change trades if your buggy manufacturing employer goes out of business.
I agree.
And you need to come up with a newer trade. And I've pushed this with the school board here, and they've moved a little bit. But we need everybody in town who's listening to give the school board a call and say, look, we need every kid to have a trade and work experience.
I like it. George,
starting in 8th grade.
Alan, a producer, is telling me, ask him about the question he had on the attorney program.
Right. Yeah, he said he was going to contact someone, Pippin. I've gotten most of the mess straightened out with this late payment to me of a pension by MetLife. And I've called the IRS, and they said they won't have many people there until the first of the year. They won't hire many people. And here's the question. I'm retired now. I may go back to work, but I don't have a job right now. So officially I can't put money into a Roth. And I want to take all of this pension money and put it into a Roth. And I understand there is a $6,500 a year spousal Roth. The question is, can I go ahead and open a Roth right now with that kind of money, or do I have to get a job at Burger King for a week?
Is this a rollover from a previous? Is that pension a taxable pension you're getting a distribution from?
They claim it's not. When it started, it was a money market, and I finished up with that company and went somewhere else. They gave it to MetLife, and they pulled it out of being non-taxable to taxable, and I just don't know if I want to fight the whole mess. But
the only deposit you can make to a Roth if you're not working is from a rollover. There is no other way to do it.
Right. Even if it's a spousal.
Spousal, same thing. One of you has to have earned income to cover that $6,500
each. Well, she does. She has earned income.
Oh, well, then you can both do one. Assuming she makes $13,000 and you're both over 50, then she can do the Roth for both of you.
Great. Oh, thanks. I appreciate it.
Just that easy. All right. Always fun to hear from you, George. Thank you.
Great.
Yeah, that's, the rules for those things are very touchy, but as long as one of you is working, the deposit is fine. And unlike a traditional IRA, it doesn't matter if you're 70 and a half. You can't contribute any more once you are to a traditional, but you still can to a Roth. So some people hit 70 and a half and they have to take money out, and then they'll go over, and if they're still working, then they'll just put it right in the Roth and at least put it back in a growth environment tax-free. So there's some tricks you can play. All right, we're going to have to take a short break. We're going to come back, finish up these questions, and then talk about... Welcome back to the Van Wee Financial Hour. I'm Steve Van Wee.
I'm Marshall Gallup.
And we still have the trivia question open. It is, to the nearest billion, how much has Trump saved businesses by deregulation? Speaking of which, we're going to finish up some quick questions, make a quick run over the amendments to the Florida Constitution that are coming up, and then we're going to delve into Marshall's specialty of reverse mortgages. Question two, real business investment, is this irrational exuberance or some really growing confidence in the business sector, or are they buying back their own stock? The answer to that, I looked it up, is about 50-50. A lot of money is going into stock buybacks. We had a little discussion during the break about whether they're good or bad. You tell me what side you want to take. I'll take the other side, and we can argue all day.
For the listeners, this was a graph that was showing how rapidly running up as a percent of GDP, not just a static figure.
Buybacks are not the be-all and end-all of the reason people are spending money. The tax breaks and their exuberance, hardly irrational, about the future, which is why you see all those job openings. So I contend that it's a kind of a win-win situation out there. A good economy should be a win-win situation. What the heck? Cost per genome. This one's interesting. In 2002, it took $100 million to do what Ancestry.com is now selling for $29. Big screen TVs aren't the only thing showing a big, big benefit for economies of scale. I remember I walked into Sound Advice many years ago, saw the first flat TV I'd ever seen in my life, and it was still maybe 3.5-4 inches thick, but it was flat on both sides, and it was incredible, and it was $15,000. Nowadays, you wouldn't buy that. It's too heavy, and it's too bulky, and besides, you can get something for $400 or $500 that's much better in that size range. It's amazing, isn't it?
I was thinking last night as I'm watching a particular show that's an interview show, how crystal clear the picture was, such that, and this is just a 40-inch,
not even a super fancy.
Yep. But, I mean, even a lady who has a couple of bumps on her skin with a lot of makeup, bingo. You're hit with it.
They said when HD was going to come out that there'd be a lot of actors and actresses put out of business because they were not quite perfect enough.
I think that TV was $300 when I bought it, and that was about 2 years ago.
Yeah, today you would still pay $300 for that size range maybe, but you'd be getting a fourth generation or whatever, super high definition.
But that $100 million to $29.
Yeah, you want to know where you came from?
What's that, 17 years?
Yeah.
Wow.
We were both saying we haven't done it yet, but we're both really tempted just for fun. Heavens to Murgatroyd, you know, you might be an American Indian.
Maybe at least 1/1,000. There was an uncle of mine who did serious research many years ago, and yet he admitted there was one trail he started following in Norfolk that he chose not to fall anymore, and he wouldn't tell anybody why.
Oh.
So.
I'd be proud if we went back there and found some of that in there. Yeah, I've had some really good black friends who always said to us, there's nobody in this country that's pure white.
Absolutely.
They were pretty much wrong with Elizabeth Warren.
Oh.
But I digress. Pages in the Federal Register. That chart, I wish I could show it to you on the radio. It rises over the history of this country, up, 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 up. And then it's like it fell off a cliff. And it is a beautiful thing to behold how this is coming out of there. And the degree to which it's coming out is the nature of the trivia question today. But if you want to know another reason that business is thriving, that investment is at an all-time high, it's because they got their hands untied. The shackles came off of many industries, and they're still coming off. Trump promised he would get rid of two for every one. He broke that promise by so much on the good side, various estimates, but most of them are coming in around 16 to 1. We didn't need all this stuff. Have you noticed the air get dirty? Have you noticed the water get polluted? Have you noticed anything like that? Think back in the 60s. Remember the term smog? Smog was in L.A. Smog was in Denver, the inversions in Denver. When was the last time you heard smog unless you were reminiscing?
The really true impact on our corporate culture. I had a friend who worked for Johnson & Johnson. And a number of years ago, they had a news flash out of South America, something terrible that they had done. He told me, he said, "Marshall, I'm going to go buy a bunch of Johnson & Johnson stock. This thing's fallen off the table." He says, "I know the corporate culture of my company would never allow that to happen. Somebody's playing games." Sure enough, 2 weeks later, turns out it was totally false.
Remember, that might have been the same time, I'm not sure, but there was a problem in a factory in Puerto Rico, I believe, where someone accused J&J of doing something wrong. It was a medicine factory, and it plummeted, and it was disgruntled employeeville. And, you know, if you believe, as this guy obviously did, and as most of us would say, that their culture is not that way, then you would do exactly that.
Well, and I mean, I worked at Wells Fargo as a great place to work. They did a few things that caused them to lose, and now they're having to reinvent themselves.
You know, it is no different than in people who are practitioners in the financial field who take commissions. At Wells Fargo, they were being incentivized by what was essentially a commission plan. When a commission stands between you and your customer, you can't be sure which side that you are going to take. Your customer can't know which side they're going to take for you. That's why the term fiduciary came out and is coming into our business, despite the objections of Republicans in Congress. Now, there's going to be another one put out next fall. But what's happening now is at the state level and the company level, people are looking at Congress saying, "You guys are absolutely hopeless. We're going to implement our own." And thank you also to the CFP board and to NAPFA and all the people who are on this case saying, "I don't care what Congress says. This is your code of ethics."
Well, I think just like your show, having a conversation and letting people know what is a fiduciary.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, when the typical consumer asks that product salesperson, "Are you my fiduciary in our relationship?" That person knows enough not to deny.
Yeah. There should be a one-word answer to that question.
Yes or no.
Exactly.
And when it starts getting long, there's a problem.
And what a segue into this. I had one more thing I wanted to bring up with Marshall. You know my penchant for headlines, stupid headlines. This is the one that I can't stop crying long enough to laugh when I read things like this. How to legally collect up to $6,129 a month in, and they have this in quotations, mortgage refunds. Now, best of all, it's a privately managed program. It's available in all 50 states. Doesn't matter if you're 26, 56, or 76 years old. It doesn't matter if you make $25,000 a year or $62,000 or $126,000. You don't even need to own a home, for that matter, to collect up to $6,129 a month in mortgage refunds. And if you download this report now, we'll send you how to do this. Does that make you want to throw things?
If somebody cannot generally explain their product, there's a reason why they don't want to tell you that.
That's why very few annuity companies use the term annuity in their advertising. Some do. I give them credit for that. But some don't.
Well, since that said, a 26-year-old, they're not using a reverse product, but they're playing a game off of a take that's been done before.
It's like the, to me, it's exactly the second coming of the piggyback off of the Canadian Social Security System ads. All that meant was they went to the Canadian fund and downloaded the stocks that they held that paid dividends. They packaged them into a thing that they would sell you and say, all you have to do to piggyback off the system is we'll tell you what the Canadian system is buying and selling. You buy them yourself and you'll get those dividends. Now, that is piggybacking off of the Canadian system, and you don't even have to be Canadian. You never even had to be in Canada, and you never had to have a job with a Canadian company, and you're piggybacking off the system. Why don't you just go to a certified financial planner and make up a plan for an investment that has a component of dividends in it as part of the total return package that they put together? Wouldn't that be a lot easier and a lot more truthful? People. All right, when we come back, we're going to delve right into it. I'm going to ask Marshall the first big question. What is happening in the reverse mortgage industry that's going to make it better for all of us? So don't go anywhere. We'll be right back. This is the Van Wee Financial Hour. Welcome back to the Van Wee Financial Hour. I'm Steve Van Wee.
I'm Marshall Gallup.
And this segment is brought to you by Robinson Landscape and Maintenance. Call Troy at 662-9794. Trivia question from Ken Bales at First Coast Alarm, 636-7888. How much money to the nearest billion has Trump saved us on deregulation? And one more thing I want to fit in before I hit Marshall with the question, the amendments. I'm not going to dwell on these for a long time. I'm going to tell you what I have decided for myself, I guess is the right way to put it. Amendment 1, yes. Amendment 2, yes. Amendment 3, no. Amendment 4, no. Amendment 5, yes. 6, yes. 7, yes. 9, no. 10, yes. That's important to me. I disagree with a lot of people, including my crack research department, who doubles as my wife. Amendment 11, yes. 12, yes. 13, no. Now, these are my opinions. I read a summary this morning where virtually every one of them was a no. And the reasoning for it was very solid. It said there's something in almost each of these that we don't like. I agree. There is something in almost every one of them because they're complex and they mix things up. But their point was, let the legislature do its job and fix these things. And my case is, I would rather wait for Godot than wait for the Florida legislature to change some stupid thing. We got to get some of this stuff done.
And you missed one item.
What's that?
For those of us in Duval County. The JEA straw ballot.
Oh, yeah. In fact, Adam was going to do that, and since he's not here today, you know, this had come into it. But for next week, that's on his agenda to talk about it, because he's a Duval voter and I'm not, so I figured I'd rather let it go to the person who's affected by it. But it's a great question. All right, Marshall, reverse mortgages. First off, a quick background. They started out poorly. They were very, very poorly launched, I believe. I think everybody does. They were very expensive. They started to get better to the point where financial planners like Adam and me, we would actually consider them at one point. Then we got to the point where we're actually using them as a planning tool. And now I know people who have them and they're very happy with them. But they've been on a rocky road even recently because of government. You know, if they can make something worse, they'll try hard to do it. But now the free market seems to be stepping in.
FHA was never intended to be the sole provider of anything they deal with. FHA came out of, let's use the movie It's a Wonderful Life. You remember people having their loans called due. Mm-hmm. FHA was created so that there would be amortizing mortgages. As long as you made your payment, that'd be fine. That got the ball rolling to where eventually there became conventional products, which meant neither FHA or VA. So that's the goal at FHA. The unfortunate circumstance is there's been volatility in the administration of FHA, which has created volatility in how the product was used. There's been a couple of different times that it's been good and it's been bad. I would say, though, each time FHA makes changes that makes it harder for somebody to get a reverse mortgage or more expensive or less desirable, it has pushed our industry to find alternatives. And those alternatives now are a conventional product. And this is something that goes up to, say, a $6 million home can get a reverse mortgage. Someone as young as 60 can get a reverse mortgage. So these are opening up more options of how it could be used.
Former age limit being 62.
Right. The FHA is 62. At least one of the borrowers has to be 62. The spouse can be younger, but that younger creates a much less available money. So the important thing is, yes, FHA has been kind of the standard bearer. Now we've added the conventional product. It's giving one more choice, and that's good. A number of years ago, it used to be the only place we were able to sell reverse mortgages was Fannie Mae. Fannie Mae was the total buyer. Then all of a sudden, Fannie Mae says, we're going to get out of it. Well, we happened to have securities that came available called Ginnie Mae's that really have been a much better use than having Fannie Mae to do it. So these are evolutions that go through every different industry. And I will say, in the American mortgage industry, the mortgage-backed security is one of the most popular worldwide investments. And that being the mortgage-backed security on American homes, that has allowed us to have a relatively low interest rate, which makes housing available to more people, because someone is getting an investment that their principal is pretty solid. It's insured by FHA. It's guaranteed by VA. It was guaranteed by Fannie Mae. In some form, it has some assurances, and it's on American real estate.
And over the past 11 years, we must have learned to package them somewhat better.
Oh, well, I will say this. I don't think there's ever been a problem in the packaging of the traditional FHA, VA, and conventional loan. Where the problem came was in greed. The subprime market was a pretty seedy place, and a lot of terrible things were going on. The congressional push on Fannie and Freddie to buy more loans to from higher risk people caused them to soak up a lot of the market. So the previous non-prime lenders started getting into wilder lending. I heard somebody the other, Ninja, no income, no job.
Yep.
You know, I mean, ultimately that's a problem. You know, it's kind of like if you're dating a girl who's always saying yes, you know, something's going to happen wrong one day.
Trust me.
You know.
Trust me. Yeah, back, I described all those bundled products way back then, 10 years ago, that if you take a stack of mortgages and you arrange it from the bottom to the top, where the bottom one is the risky one, the top one is the safest one, then you take a knife and you just cut them right down from top to bottom, cut a slice out of them and put it in your pocket, and then you say, look, I own this package of mortgages, and see this top piece of paper? This thing has almost no risk. Therefore, that slice, which they call a tranche, that has virtually no risk. And furthermore, it was sold by the Bank of America. It's got to be good. And lo and behold, the Moody's and S&P come out, and they rate those products, and they rate them according to who's selling them. So you've got these things back in 07 and 08 where you think you've got a winner that might be paying you 5.5%, 6.5%. They're held back by these fantastic mortgages, guaranteed, and then the full faith and credit of the Bank of America or somebody like that. How can anything go wrong until you read the book to the end? And that was what created that big problem. And it's unfortunate to me that whenever the industry has a problem like that, that what comes out of it is fear in the public. And unfortunately, that was a time when reverse mortgages were just kind of starting to get there. Well, they have the word mortgage in them, and that's a problem.
Well, as I mentioned before, RTC put people in jail. The Fed's action on the recent challenges didn't.
Yeah.
Like you read the advertisement. This is the one area I will say I agree with what CFPB did. They really came down on people with misleading advertising.
Yes, they did.
And folks, someone doing marketing that is lying, that should tell you something about the product and the people that are pushing it.
Yep, I absolutely agree. Anyway, the thing that I have always liked since about, I think it was 2010 or so when it was brought into play, is the reverse mortgage to purchase, which
I think
is the cleverest thing that they've ever done in this industry. What that means is let's say you're moving to Florida for the rest of ever or something like that, or just downsizing your new place, or maybe you're upsizing your current place, but you're looking for a place to live forever. You get a reverse mortgage to purchase, meaning you only have to pay about half of the price of the thing down. The reverse pays the rest, and you never, ever make a payment from that day on until...
just your taxes and insurance, like you would if you owned it for free and clear.
Yeah, absolutely right. Okay, I've got a little housekeeping to do. First off, thanks, Marshall, so much for being here and filling in. You're excellent as always. $23 billion have been saved so far from what Trump has deregulated, and that is just a beginning.
Awesome.
Watch for this recovery to really take hold. Don't believe those stupid headlines that say this coming recession within 2 years is going to be worse than the Great Depression. Not the Great Recession. They're saying the Great Depression. It won't be either one. It can't be. Things are too solid right now. The financial footing of this country is excellent. All right, got to go. See you next week. Thanks so much. This is the Van Wee Financial Hour.